Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lay.
So far on the show, we've mainly talked to people that own single-family houses, duplexes, and fourplexes. But I want to learn a little bit more about the apartment building side of the business. So I've brought Rennie Gabriel on the show today. He owns six apartment buildings and one single-family house. And I want to kind of pick his brain and learn a little bit more about the business. Rennie, welcome to the show. Why don't we start with you telling us a little bit about yourself and how you got started owning apartment buildings?
Sure. I teach at UCLA to contribute back to the community. And the name of that course is called How to Buy and Manage Apartment Buildings for Profit. I have a best-selling award-winning book called Wealth on Any Income. And I got started on this because I inherited half of a four-unit building when my mom passed away. I was about age 33. And I took a class at UCLA on, okay, how do I manage this building? So that would have been, she died in 81. So a long time ago.
Yeah.
So that was how I learned about apartment buildings, and found that, it made a lot of sense from the standpoint of what I was learning in the class. And I actually never thought about buying a single family house for a rental. I only thought, apartment buildings make sense.
Okay. Well, so tell me, what are they more profitable? Is that why you prefer apartments over single families?
There's a bunch of advantages that I see. So I'll compare it to, I'll start with a single family house as an investment. Mm-hmm. And the advantage is that, you know, people understand buying houses. They can have 30-year financing. They know what it takes to qualify to buy it. You know, they lived in a house, they know how they'd want to remodel it to make it appealing to a renter and things of that nature. So from that standpoint, because people are familiar with the houses, I think that's why they buy them, to rent them out.
Right.
So the disadvantage is that the market dictates the value of the house. It's completely emotional. And I'm not an emotional kind of guy. I don't like being run by other people's emotions. I do not invest much in the stock market because it's psychotic. And so I wouldn't want to transfer that same kind of resistance to a single family house where someone says, I don't like this color paint. So when it comes to the resale value, the market could be up, the market could be down. People could just be turned off because they don't like the landscaping. I mean, it's just, pardon me, silliness to me.
Right. Well, let me ask you this, just to maybe give you a different perspective. So say you want to sell one day and you want to sell one of your buildings. Mm-hmm. If you had a single family and you wanted to sell it, I feel like maybe you could sell it quicker because you could sell it to an investor or to someone that's going to live in it. Where in apartment building, I feel like it may be harder to sell because you only have an investor that could be a buyer.
I hear where you're coming from, that there are more people who want to buy a house than there are investors who want to buy apartment buildings. I don't want to sound mean, but it's irrelevant because there are so many investors looking for apartment buildings. I mean, I listed one for sale last year at a price that I thought was ridiculous, and I had someone come forward and offer something close to what I was asking.
Okay.
Because he was coming out of a tax-deferred exchange and had to buy something. And there's so many people in that situation. I get letters all the time from brokers saying, I have a client who's in a 1031 exchange and he has to buy something. Please sell me your building. Please let me talk to you about putting, you know, listing it for sale. It's about as hard to sell as a house.
Okay. Okay. Now, what about managing an apartment building? To me, it just seems like, and maybe I'm overcomplicating things, but it seems like it's more complicated than a single family house. Am I overthinking it, or is it more work?
No, it's actually less work. If you look at the common component in a house rental versus an apartment rental, it's your tenant. Mm-hmm. If you do proper screening for your house and you do the same proper screening for the apartment, you end up with a good tenant.
Right.
The reason it's actually easier is because, let's say you have a 6-unit building, mm-hmm. something nice and small.
Right.
One, you get commercial financing. So they're financing the building, which means it doesn't matter what your credit is. That's number one. Number two, you've got one plumbing system taking care of 6 people instead of 6 plumbing systems for 6 houses.
Right.
You've got one roof to take care of for 6 families. You've got possibly one heating system. You've got one gardener to show up to take care of the property instead of having him show up at 6 different properties.
Right.
I mean, on and
yeah.
on and on.
Yeah.
It is so much simpler.
Do you get economies of scale too? You know, say if you have to replace doors on all your units, can you get better pricing buying 35 doors as opposed to maybe 1 or 2 doors?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, yes. And I guess another aspect is, like, if I remodel a kitchen, I'm remodeling a kitchen for an apartment where I can get a laminate countertop. I can get prefab counter, prefab cabinets to install. And I literally can remodel an entire kitchen for about $1,200.
Okay.
You're not going to remodel a kitchen in a house for $1,200.
No, you're not. Now, all right, the one negative rap that I've heard a lot with apartments is that you get a lot of turnover, that with a single family, you may have a tenant that stays for 5 or 6 years. And with apartments, people maybe are more transient. Is that true?
Yes, it is true. And at the same time, in rent control areas, it's a tremendous advantage. Because in a rent control area, like Los Angeles has a lot of buildings that were built before 1980 mm-hmm. that are under rent control, which means you can only increase the rent 3%. And not until someone moves out can you bring it up to market. So you actually would like to have the turnover so you can bring the rents up to market.
Right.
That's number
okay.
one. And number two, I've had some tenants stay in a 300 square foot studio apartment for 15 and 16 years.
Wow. Wow. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. So you can have the turnover, but it doesn't mean you will.
Okay.
In addition, I treat my tenants as fabulous people. And the reason for that is they're buying the apartment building for me.
Right, right. Yeah, they are. They
so
are.
I treat them well. And when I hear stories about how other landlords don't treat their tenants nicely, I'm trying to figure out, these guys are out to lunch mentally. What's
yeah,
wrong with that?
I don't understand that either. Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, why not treat your clients well and get them to stay, get them to like you? I mean, that's something that every landlord should really take that advice.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I got a note from one of the tenants over the holiday season saying what a wonderful landlord I am and how much they love living there. And, you know, that it's just the best experience they've ever had. And, you know, these are the kinds of things I get from my tenants.
Right.
I take care of them because it's their money that's buying the property for
right.
me. They're
now,
buying it.
Now, tell me about commercial financing. Is it tricky to get commercial financing? And where do you go to get it? Are you going to a community bank?
Community banks do have commercial financing available. So does Wells Fargo. So does Chase. All the major banks provide financing for apartment buildings.
And what are they looking for? Like, what's the process like to apply for commercial financing?
Maybe a little bit more than just applying for a home loan. The situation is that what they're looking to be sure of is that the building's income will support the loan, because if the person defaults and they take the building, they want to be sure their loan is covered.
Right.
So the individual's credit, the individual's assets aren't as important because they're really looking to the apartment building to cover the indebtedness, not the individual.
Okay. Well, can you walk me through maybe a typical deal or maybe one of your deals with the numbers of maybe how much of a down payment the banks are going to require and like what you would need to get approved for a loan?
Yes. You're looking generally at about, well, I guess that's one of the hindrances of the apartment building versus the house. Generally, you're looking at 30 to 35% as a down payment instead of getting away with something like a 10% down payment.
Okay.
So you've got a significantly higher down payment requirement.
Okay.
The interest rate is going to be a little bit higher, or maybe you're going to be at 3.75% for a single family house. You're going to be at 4.25% on the loan for an apartment building. So maybe 0.5% more.
Okay. In your area, how much, like, how do they value the building? Is it per door or is there a different way that it would be valued?
Well, yeah, per door is one of the ways of looking at it from the standpoint of a purchase price and to compare it to other buildings. But what the bank is looking at is a coverage ratio, and usually around 1.2 or 120% of the loan needs to be represented in the income of the building. So if, let's say, someone has to cover an indebtedness of about $80,000 per year, they need to have 120% of that as income, 80, 1, 2, 3 times 1.2. They need to have $96,000 of income as a minimum.
Okay.
So again, it's the building that qualifies, not the individual.
Okay. So how much cash flow, I guess, like, I'm just trying to wrap my head around the numbers. Like, could you maybe just give me, like, say what the total price for a building, and you could use a building that maybe you've seen or one that you've sold, just kind of a hypothetical building, like what a building may cost and what kind of rental income you would be looking at.
All right. So there's two ways of looking at buying an apartment building. One of them being pride of ownership. This is where you're buying a building. It's like a bond. You don't have to worry about painting or the plumbing or the roof. You put your money down, you collect your rents, and there's no work to do. That was not my situation. I was starting over from broke at age 50. I was broke. Mm-hmm. I was setting aside $500 a month to kind of like rebuild my net worth. Mm-hmm. And I'd accumulated about $19,000. A real estate partner of my wife said, oh, I found this little triplex we could buy. And all we needed was $68,000 down. Well, all the money I'd accumulated up to that point was $19,000. That was 25% of the down. My wife came up with 25%. The real estate person came up with 50%, and we bought it.
Okay.
We rehabbed the property. We painted. We put in new tenants. We held it for about 4 years and sold it at $500,000 profit.
Oh, that's incredible. Wow.
And then what is allowed, whether it's a single family house or whether it's an apartment building, is a tax deferred exchange. Mm-hmm. So we sold the property, we took the $500,000, we paid no taxes on it, and we picked up a 15 unit building in Burbank. Now, what I look for instead of pride of ownership are buildings that are mismanaged and have deferred maintenance.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's what this building in Burbank had. We bought it for about $1.1 million. The rental income was about $5,600 per month. We spent $250,000 remodeling it and changed the income from $5,600 a month to $16,000 a month.
Wow. What did you do to that? That's a huge change.
Yeah. Well, we ripped out the kitchens. It hadn't been updated in 40 years. And like I said, it's inexpensive to remodel in a kitchen in an apartment building.
Right.
We installed hardwood floors. We repainted. We upgraded the electrical. Like I said, it was mismanaged. One of the tenants who was there for 17 years had two rent increases. He was paying $400 a month when he moved in. And when we took over the building 17 years later, he was up to $450.
Wow.
So I increased his rent to $700 and he stayed and paid that.
Okay.
And that was without remodeling his unit.
Now, with the other units, did you just have to get the tenants out of there? Or was there a lot of vacancy when you took over?
No, there was there were two vacancies out of 15
okay.
units.
And
what we did is we told the people after we bought it, selectively, we're increasing your rent by 100%. Mm-hmm. And then they just moved and then we remodeled the units.
Okay. So you didn't have to evict anyone that they just left because you're doubling their rent and they can't afford it or whatever.
And two of the tenants stayed because they knew what a bargain it was, even at 100% increase.
Right. Now, how do you find properties like that? Like, how did you find that deal?
That was like a needle in the haystack. We found it on LoopNet, which the way it works with properties for apartment buildings generally is that the people in the brokerage offices that specialize in apartment buildings are continually out trying to drum up listings. Mm-hmm. And when they finally get a listing, they let the clients they've worked with in the past know they found a property for sale and they offer it to their own clients to start with. And the reason? They pick up the listing commission and the buying commission.
Right.
So they double end it.
Right.
Well, so let's say they offer it to all of their clients and none of the clients decide to buy that building. Then they'll let other brokers in their office know about it. So at least it stays within that company. Mm-hmm. And then if none of the brokers and their clients pass on it, then it goes out to LoopNet and the MLS. So by the time it hits those, a lot of people have already seen it and passed on it.
Right. Okay. So it's probably not that great of a deal, or someone would have picked it up along the way.
Exactly.
Right? Okay.
And so that's why I say this one was a needle in the haystack. There were some unpermitted units, and a person had made an offer on it and was supposed to show up at the inspection and didn't. And the broker said, well, you know, I'm showing it to the person who submitted an offer. If you want to come by, you can. And that person didn't show up.
Wow.
So we got the building.
So how have you bought your other buildings? Like, have they been similar type scenarios?
I would say it's relationship based.
Okay.
Two buildings we bought because a brother and sister had inherited them and they were not getting along. And the real estate partner knew the brother. And so we were able to pick that up. Another building, someone wanted to list for sale and it was a new agent and he didn't know what to do. And he consulted our real estate partner, asking for help. And the partner said, tell you what, I will help you list this property for sale as long as we get to buy it. And I will let you have the commission when we buy it.
Okay.
And another one, the real estate partner was driving by, and as they were putting up a for sale sign on the property, he called. We were the first ones to contact the broker, first ones to submit the offer. And the way that she worked was she continues to work with the first person who submits an offer. And then if it doesn't work out, she'll go to the next person who submitted an offer.
Okay.
Instead of doing best and final or comparing, that's how she worked.
Yeah.
So we picked up that one. So a lot of the buildings we picked up because of relationships. And if someone is looking to buy apartment buildings, I would suggest creating a relationship with a broker, whether it's Keller Williams Commercial, whether it's C.B. Richard Ellis, whether it's Marcus and Millichap. You want to have a relationship with the people who are out scouring to create listings.
Okay. Now, it seems like the numbers are really good. I mean, with those numbers, that you mentioned, I mean, you would never be able to get anywhere close to that with a single family house in Los Angeles. I mean, I see why you like the apartments a lot better. Is there any way that somebody could get involved with apartments without having a 35% down payment? Like, are there any other different strategies?
Well, yeah, the way that units where there's only 2, 3, or 4 units are financed like a house. So they can get a 30-year loan, they can get the low down payment. So if you're buying something that's less than 5 units, 4 or fewer, you have a smaller down payment. You may need to move into the property to be an owner occupant. And, you know, so that would be one of the ways to get in. Another way, without worrying about the 30% down payment and having enough money, is to follow the advice I always give people, which is creating wealth is not a do-it-yourself project. It's a team sport. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to come in by yourself.
Right. Right.
You know, 3, 4 people raise the money together and make the down payment. And providing one of them has the expertise to manage it, which, you know, can be acquired from books and programs online, sure. UCLA, whatever.
Yeah.
It'll turn out fine.
You know, managing that, that's a good thing. So do you manage your properties yourself or do you have a property manager?
Well, I have some control issues. And so I manage them.
Okay. Okay.
I'll give you an example. And this also applies to a single family house. My wife and I were away in Europe and a tenant said that their toilet wasn't shutting off. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I called my plumber. He said, I don't work in that area. I can give you a referral to someone else. Great. I called the someone else. They went out and said, well, you need to replace the toilet. It'll be $200. Mm-hmm. I said, well, you know what? This will have to wait till I get back.
Yeah.
I get back, and this was a long time ago. But if any of your listeners have lifted the lid on the toilet tank and looked inside, the old fashioned ones had this long rod with a ball at the end, the float.
Right. Yep.
Well, the reason it wasn't shutting off is because the float was a little too high. Wow. So I bent the rod and now the toilet shut off.
$200 saved. Wow.
$200 saved. So, you know, the point being, it costs nothing to fix this. So I go out and I see what the issues are before I call the plumber, before I call the electrician. You know, I learned in junior high school how to change an electrical outlet. You know, it takes 10 minutes. I mean, you can have a locksmith come out and for $125 change the locks, or you go to Home Depot and you buy a set for $20 and you spend the 10 minutes it takes to change a lock.
Right, right.
And each time I have a tenant turnover, I change the locks. I keep the old ones that get rotated through the other units. And like I said, it takes 10 minutes.
Yeah. Well, Rennie, I think this was really interesting. I really learned a lot about apartment buildings and you got me really curious. I really think this is something that I want to learn more about and maybe consider buying an apartment at some point. Why don't you tell us where we can track you down online if someone wants to see what else you're up to?
You got it. I'll tell you that, and I'll give you one more advantage for apartment buildings.
Yeah.
So anyone who goes to wealthonanyincome.com and opts in, I will send them a free summary of my award-winning best-selling book, Wealth on Any Income. And it includes the forms that wealthy people use to play the game of money. And the advantage that I didn't even get to was that apartment buildings are sold based on rental income, which means if I have a gross rent multiplier of 10 and I raise the rent by $100 a month, that's $1,200 a year, I've just increased the value of the building by $12,000. Mm-hmm. Has nothing to do with psychology or market values or anything. It's based on rental income. I raise rents, the building's worth more money, period. Right. Yeah, I'm doing, starting in February, I'm going to be doing a program called Wealth on Any Income, teaching people how to handle money effectively, how to grow their wealth, what the attitudes of the wealthy people are, how to use the forms that wealthy people use, what the investments are, which is not just stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. So I'm taking the UCLA class I've been teaching online in the classroom and putting it online.
If you missed the link to Rennie's website, I'll go ahead and put a link to it on our show notes page. You can find that at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode58. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back with a new episode next Tuesday. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.